Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
We're eager to enter the High Summit to give thanks to the gods.
The gods do not require you to enter the temple to give thanks.
But you could get in if you wanted to. You just have to complete the journey of the Mother Compeer.
Brava.
Journey of the Mother Compeer?
It's a race and a test of devotion because it's quite grueling. Everyone says that we're due because watching the race makes the gods happy and we've been without rain for so long. Only the one who wins is worthy of entering the temple. There, they're close to the gods and they can ask for their blessing.
Let's discuss another time, Brava. Our compeers only just arrived.
But we wish to show our devotion in whatever way we can.
And this is perfect. If you make the request, we could do it tomorrow morning. Isn't that right, Father? One just has to make the request. That's how it works.
Then I make the request. Nothing's more important to us than entering that summit.
I think Jesse's ready to go. Jesse's raring.
I'm ready.
All right, Dan.
I'm raring.
Dan's ready. Jesse's ready.
Raring. We are raring to podcast.
What that means is we can start the podcast.
Toast 'em ups.
All right. Toast 'em ups. All right. We'll get to that, Jesse, in a second. Okay.
Well, he started toasting.
Okay. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Greetings, compeers.
Yes. Hello, brave compeers. Welcome at long last, not that long, to It's Got Star Trek. It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast. It's the...
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
It's episode number 239.
We've come here Jesus from afar.
And I only said at long last because we've had a bit of a week break. We still provided some top-notch content.
It was
content.
So weak. That break was so weak.
I know. It was hardly even a break at all.
But we did have a week in between our last official episode, 238. So this is... Episode 239. And
there was a bit of fun in between. Yes.
We have a lot to do. We have way
too much to do this
week, so we're going to get right into it.
We waited a long time to start recording.
I'll do a quick overview of what the plan is tonight, and we'll stick as close to that plan as possible. So first,
stick 'em up.
Let's get to it.
We have a very brief correct 'em ups.
Uh-oh. This is new to me.
Then we have Grayson's special gift.
Gift 'em ups.
Grayson's special gift.
Then we have, relatedly, a voicemail from Lily and Isaac.
All right.
And then, relatedly, we have a special presentation from Dan.
Ah!
Then Dan and I will briefly discuss attending the Whistle Speak premiere.
Oh, that's right.
Here in Washington, D.C. at the Motion Picture Association of America. And then...
Don't give up now, come here.
And then we will, indeed, squeeze in a discussion of Whistle Speak, followed by a discussion of Erica.
You too will endure this test.
Hell yeah.
Okay. All right. So, as I said, we got to get started. So, that's what we're going to do. First, correct 'em ups.
Oh, no.
Very briefly.
The most important thing is to work in harmony with the rest of your compeers.
I like that philosophy. Mm-hmm. And in this case...
And I like how he presented it.
It was a nice little plan.
Because she was getting a little too big for her britches or whatever.
Yeah.
Or she was...
They was getting...
No, this is actually...
Oh, you burnt your toast.
No, Dan, we'll
Oh, my God, this toast is burnt as fuck.
Oh, well...
It's going to give you cancer.
Okay.
I can't eat that toast.
All right, well, we got to turn that down even more.
Toast two.
Because they were getting too big for their britches.
Yeah, yes. So, but this all works. This is a good segue because Khaki from Joy of Trek noted that I think it was episode 238... he noted that we inadvertently misgendered Lieutenant Gallo And I don't recall exactly where, but at some point...
Did we really?
Well, because Lieutenant Gallo also identifies with they, them pronouns.
Yeah, I thought so.
But okay. I think I didn't catch that. I don't know if Dan caught it. It was just, that was like, you know, slipped under our radar. We like to get that right. Mm-hmm. So
I always feel very bad when I get that wrong.
Well, we thank you very much, Kaki, for pointing that out to us. And we will try to keep track of that this week because...
Smells like burnt toast.
Because Rava, is it Rava? Is that her name in Whistlespeak? Also
their
identifies...
Name. Their name.
Okay, yes. Oh. It's their way, see? Exactly. Thank you, Dan. Rava, they identify using they, them pronouns mm-hmm. as well. Okay, so that's the correct them up. Mm-hmm. Now, mail them ups. First of all, we had mentioned offhand... a few weeks back, something about Vegemite. Dan was talking about Vegemite. Mm-hmm. And so Grayson, listener Grayson, a longtime fan, sent Dan a voucher for Vegemite in the mail.
Totally awesome.
An Amazon voucher, which is great. So now Dan was like,
Vegemite.
Now he has Vegemite. And so he wants to do a little demonstration. So hold on. We're gonna do a video for you guys this week. So this section will be put on our YouTube page.
He's toasting them up.
Dan's gonna start getting this ready, and I'm just gonna turn on the video camera.
We burned some toast.
So Grayson, thank you so much for the Vegemite.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Agamemnon.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Whoops, not no thank you. I mean...
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was awesome. That was a nice surprise.
Oh, this is great. This is one of the most delightful things we've encountered so far. So Dan has got the Vegemite. Now, what you can't see now if you're listening to the podcast, but you can see now if you're watching the video, is that Dan is unscrewing the Vegemite cap. Oh, he's sniffing the Vegemite.
It almost looks like Nutella in this lighting, but I know not quite.
But
like,
it's not.
Yeah, I can tell by looking at it that it's not, but it almost has that sort of appearance.
All right. Now, Dan, did you try a second round of
we
toast?
Burnt the toast again. Did
it fucking burnt it. Dude, this toast is...
It's even blacker than
how
before.
How about this? Stick it in for like 2 seconds and then pop it up manually.
Yeah.
This is wild.
Holy.
What we're doing is we have a toaster on the podcasting table.
I go through my whole loaf of bread.
It's my grandmother's old toaster. It's a badass toaster. Toaster, but we don't know the settings.
Like from Europe or from and Ohio?
No, from Ohio.
And it only takes a couple minutes to burn the fuck out of them.
Yeah. I mean, this is a powerful toaster. When you get the settings dialed in right, it's excellent.
I believe it.
Okay, how about this? While the toast is doing its magic...
You wouldn't think the settings would be that difficult.
We've got all sorts of kismet going on tonight because...
Kismet.
Because Grayson sent you a voucher for that business... and meanwhile, we have a voicemail from Lily and Isaac from Australia... with some advice.
Hi guys, it's Isaac and Lily from
Plantware.
Oh, right.
We just listened to your episode and we had to send this voice message in. Now, first of all, in the last episode that you guys put out, you mentioned Vegemite. Now, us Australians, we laugh at Americans when they put on Vegemite because they put way too much. They cover it like Nutella or chocolate spread or something.
I figured.
What you want to do? Just a really light touch. You just want just a little bit of Vegemite, and you'll be laughing. And you know that I'm right, because I'm a jam eater. Your definition of jam eater may differ from this Unplanned Trek and its subsidiaries. The other thing that you mentioned is, do people in different parts of the world, meaning not your part of the world, and meaning my part of the world, say two-parters, referring to an extra long episode, or two parties? Mm. And I have to say, what's a two-parter? Anyway, that does it from me and Lily from...
Who
is that?
That was Lily.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Who's Lily?
Thank you.
Thanks, Agamemnon! all right. So is he saying that they do say two parties?
I leave that open to the interpretation of each individual person.
Or does he actually not know what we're talking about?
Oh, I think he knows.
Boy, that toast like got nice and toasted in like less than a minute.
There you go. 1950s toasters. Way to go. All right, crazy. Dan. So what's the next step? You've got your toast.
Got my toast.
You've got your Vegemite. And you've been advised by a 100% authentic Aussie, an Australian.
Australian.
From Tasmania.
I'll just put the bread on my laptop like you're supposed to do.
Okay. All right.
So I'm imagining it's very little.
All right.
I don't know if you can see that.
Dan looks, he's put some Vegemite on a knife. It looks like he's about to smoke some hash off of that knife.
I don't know. When he said thin...
The Vegemite looks like hash that he's smearing on.
Yes. Are you you're smearing...
Now, here's my question. Do you think I'm supposed to put it on as much Vegemite on as you would like butter on a toast? Or do you think it's more like a little more
just a little
butter?
And you're laughing?
I'm not the one to ask because I put a lot of butter on my toast. I like buttered bread and I like a lot of butter, a little bit of salt. Okay.
I wouldn't put any butter on butter.
I put it on half of it. This is what I put on there.
Okay.
See, it doesn't, you can't see it. The width
of it. A little
aggressive
there in the middle.
You can't see it when I do it sideways, so it's not too much. See, there
it
is.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Ready to go?
Ready to go.
All right, Dan's. No, wait, real quick, Dan. Is this the first time you're trying Vegemite?
I had Vegemite once before years ago at your place, Patrick.
Ah, but you don't recall the.
No, it was like 12, 13. 13 years ago. It was something ridiculous.
So who knows what it tasted like?
Yeah. All I remember is that I liked it better than I thought I would.
All right. Well, let's find out what happens. Dan's about to take a... Oh, Mr. Crunchy.
I'll try not to be too gross.
You don't like
the
ASMR? The Dan's eating... Mm. How about this? Dan, quit with all that. That's so
you.
Gross, Dan.
You're fooling nobody, Patrick.
All right.
Everyone knows that's you.
All right. Are you digging it?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Digging the video.
I would put a little more.
You're like, I remember it being not bad. All right, Dan's getting
more.
He's digging out some more.
I think I'm about to make the American mistake.
That's like a foreign policy.
I'm putting like, too much Vegemite. I'm leaving my tea bag in.
What was that on that? Was it History of the World or Part Two where they sing that song and they're like, you're doing the French mistake, ooh ah, you know.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Do 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 do.
I mean,
stick
that
out
sounds,
your, stick
sounds,
out your, go stick out your tush, give it a push.
It sounds Mel Brooks-y.
Look at me now, we're doing the French mistake, ooh la.
But
something.
You're doing the American mistake, which is globbing on too much Vegemite.
Too much Vegemite.
I mean, too much is subjective.
Vegemite, fireworks.
All right.
Yeah.
That's too much.
Oh, no.
Right, Dan is,
but you have a bunch of toast that doesn't have it on there, so take a bite of plain toast.
Dan is taking too much Vegemite.
Mm-hmm.
All righty.
So I think, that was good the amount I put on before.
All right.
So.
All right. Now, is that it, or did you have a special surprise, like a special bonus surprise
good
for the end?
Uh-huh. I decided to make my own Vegemite sandwich.
Okay. Like the song.
We got some Cabot Creamery.
Hold
What's
on.
Going? Oh no, Dan has a Dan introduced this
and
to Jesse and
onions?
I before we started
Just
recording
wait.
The podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Dan said I have a bag of mystery ingredients.
Mystery ingredients. So here I've decided to make my own Vegemite sandwich.
Okay.
I probably already put too much, but you're going to need a little bit more on this sandwich because you'll need more Vegemite than usual because you got to overcome the flavors of the other ingredients.
Yeah.
So I got some Vegemite.
You want it to shine through.
Yeah, so.
Shine on.
So this is probably too much Vegemite for a normal thing, but this is how I'm doing it for my sandwich. So on the sandwich, you have Vegemite. We have here now some Vermont extra sharp cheddar.
Okay.
Put that on there like that.
There are many brands available. All right, so he's got Vegemite. And by the way, this is all on a foundation of Martin's potato bread.
Yes, toasted Martin's potato bread.
Toasted Martin's potato bread toasted in a 1950s toaster.
Mm-hmm. Fuck this laptop. Okay, that's better.
All right,
and so now what I'm going to take is I'm going to take my special Danny G's pickle and onion mix with yellow sweet onion and pickles.
Nice.
It's what gives the McDonald's burgers their flavor. It's the flavor of pickle and onion.
And you've been working on deciphering this for a number of years, I believe.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm a little ashamed it took me that long.
You finally worked out the ratios.
I used to think it was the mustard, and the mustard does, of course, add to it. But the real defining flavor is the pickle and
it's
onion.
It's very pickly. Yeah.
So this is a mixture of pickles and onions.
All right.
Right there.
Good.
So we're going to spread that on there like so. Remember, it's got the Vermont extra sharp cheddar. We'll just put a little more cheddar on just
Vermont.
To, be, just
right.
to be happy. Okay, and
right
now we finish it off. I guess I'll have to use, well, I'll just use a regular non-toasted piece of bread so we can move this along.
Moving right along.
Move along home.
Moving along
say.
Home to the third shop.
Duke's mayonnaise.
Oh, nice.
Mayonnaise.
Hey, I'm going to need to try some of that later. I like Duke's mayonnaise, and I haven't had it in a while, so I might need a glob of that, just sort of an extracurricular glob, if you don't mind.
Oh,
you
no.
can help yourself. You can spoon it in your mouth for all I care.
I mean, that's exactly what I'm requesting.
Hell
but
yeah.
Here's
later,
your
maybe
spoon,
maybe
baby.
During the next commercial break.
And I'm be liberal with the mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
So we got Vegemite.
Just slob it on there.
Again, that's the American mistake, but yeah. I don't consider
Vegemite
that one a mistake.
And mayonnaise.
So we got Vegemite. We have Vermont. This is Cabot. Vermont extra sharp cheddar.
Uh-huh.
We have yellow sweet onions. We have pickles. And then we have mayonnaise.
Okay. And you show the camera, you know, lift it up there, you know,
this is...
and it's one side is toasted toast. One side is raw bread.
Mm. Yeah. Because I didn't think to put in a third slice and I'm not going to wait around for another fucking.
All right. Now you're going to put that together and you're going to take a bite and that's going to amuse our listeners.
Okay. Here we go.
And viewers.
I have not tried this yet.
Okay. It was a good bite there. I could taste the mayonnaise through the fucking microphone.
No, dude.
It's just toned down.
I'm glad I could not.
Okay,
taste the
mayonnaise.
We could use some more Vegemite.
So, folks at home,
while
Dan puts more Vegemite on his horrifying sandwich, you can go to our YouTube page. That's YouTube/ It's Got Star Trek, I think, or search for It's Got Star Trek. Go to our YouTube page, subscribe. Mostly it's just our podcast up there, but we do occasionally throw up some videos, and here's one.
It's just like I'm going to throw up this sandwich later.
Oh, no.
Here's a video. This video will be online to enjoy in at least one format, if not multiple formats, because Jesse's been recording along with his cell phone as well to get some action shots. So I hope you enjoy that. I've certainly enjoyed watching Dan put together this monstrosity of a sandwich that smells pretty good, actually. I might go over there and snag a bite later on. Okay. Thank you very much, Dan.
I thought that there might have been too much Vegemite the second time around. I think somewhere in between when I did the first and the second.
That would be ideal.
I've got that mouthful of food voice
going on. I noticed that.
It's like the mouthful of smoke talk versus a mouthful of food.
All right.
And if you don't have mayonnaise, you can use yellow mustard. Or you could even use Heinz Carolina vinegar barbecue sauce.
Whoa, dude.
Only Heinz.
Only Heinz. And none of that legit shit. Just Heinz Carolina style. So yeah, I would say that this sandwich.
I didn't know that existed. That's a new product.
I would eat it again. I would totally eat it again.
All right. Do you want to sign off on the video part?
So this is Dan. Dan's new Vegemite Austricana sandwich.
Put
or
it
something.
In your mouth.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of a name for
Australia.
It.
I'll think of a different name than that.
Like Americana.
Oh,
Austria.
Okay, I get it. If you explain the joke,
if I explain
it's
it,
called jam
that means it's a good
jam
joke.
Jam eating.
It's the American jam eater's delight. How about that?
All right.
And this is me signing off. Goodbye.
We're still doing the podcast, though. We're not signing off.
All right. Okay. I'm turning off the camera now.
It's weird.
Boop. Okay, now we can get back to our regularly scheduled podcast.
Alrighty, folks. Alrighty, I'm just sitting back down. So that was an experiment right there.
That was fun.
Not just in sandwich making, but in podcast making.
Yes.
See if that worked.
The world's first Vegemite sandwich on a podcast. Who knows? We can claim that. We're not going to look it up.
Do you want to crunch some burnt toast on the microphone?
No. That's a little bit too burnt for me.
Okay, and one last thing before we...
I can eat some burnt toast, but that crosses my...
One last thing before we get into our... before Dan and I talk very briefly about going to that premiere. We did have another voicemail from Frasier, and we might need help from Frasier or the rest of the audience.
Frasier. Laser.
Hi, beautiful nerds. It's Frasier. You guys rock, and I know we're about to hear a lot of this... on the next episode.
I cannot for the life of me.
All right, so here's the deal, Frasier. Dan and I listened to this.
That guy's really funny.
I know, he's great. We've listened to that a whole bunch of times, and we're not able to interpret what that clip is from. We think it's from...
We don't even know what he's saying.
We think it might be Paul Stamets saying something, maybe in whistle speak.
But then, Patrick, you were also asking me if Jet Reno ever said masshole at some point.
I don't know if... I couldn't quite get it. So we'll play it one more time. And if Frasier, you can write in or send another voicemail clarifying, or an astute audience member with very good ears might be able to figure it out and write in at feedback@discussstartrek.com to let us know what's up. All right, one more time. Okay.
Hi, beautiful nerds. It's Fraser. You guys rock. And I know we're about to hear a lot of this on the next episode.
Mousehole.
I don't know.
Mousehole?
It's not Rena.
No, it sounds like Stamets.
Dan was the one who made me think
he
it was,
does.
Yeah, mousehole? Was he saying mousehole?
I don't know. It's a mystery, but I definitely want to solve that mystery. All right. Again, moving right
Let's
along.
Let's find that mouse hole.
Moving right along like Kermit and Fozzie Bear.
Word.
Dan and I got to see Whistlespeak on the big screen, and it was wild.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. Jesse, unfortunately, had a prior commitment, so he couldn't join us. But again, thanks to Isaac from Unplanned Trek, who was the one who alerted us to this
that was pretty tight,
this opportunity.
Thanks, Agamus.
That was a good looking out.
We were able to sneak in right under the wire. Not everyone got in. Jack Dorino from Let's Talk About Treks didn't get the invite, and then got the invite at the last minute, so he couldn't go. Go listen to their podcast, Let's Talk About Treks, and you can learn more about that. But anyway, we got lucky. We were able to go, and it consisted of a cocktail party in the lobby of the headquarters for the Motion Pictures Association of America here in Washington, D.C. on 16th Street. And they had really good hors d'oeuvres. They had drinks.
They were fancy hors d'oeuvres.
Was there shrimp?
My favorite one was like
asparagus.
It was like a fig with some bacon on it
something. Some kind of, was there cheese on it too?
That's where
it's like some cheese on it.
Yeah, there was pretty fancy.
It was
like,
good stuff.
Figgy cheese bacon. Yeah.
There were tons of awesome Star Trek fans there. I mean, everyone was a Star Trek fan.
They had various things on display, like Wolverine's claws the movie. That was really cool. They had kick ass Batman statue.
Batman statue. They had.
And also, I was looking at this from Batman. I was looking. They had a Batman motorcycle, and I was like, up close, these things look kind of cheap. But then I looked over, and it was from Batman and Robin, so that explained that one.
Oh yeah, because
that movie was just like.
I think I saw a picture of the Batman statue with you that you guys. Mm-hmm.
The Batman and Robin movie was just like a neon circus of grossness.
Wild.
Yeah.
So lots of cool stuff. They treated everybody very well. It was very. Not just professional. It was a fancy event. I actually felt very underdressed. I was wearing a t-shirt that said there are four lights and shorts.
You were wearing cargo shorts.
I was wearing cargo shorts. A lot of people were dressed in suits and stuff, but not everybody.
I think those people in suits had just come from like their office.
Well,
job
yeah,
or
that's
something.
The thing is, a lot of people were quite literally walking over from like the White House and the State Department. The marquee part of the evening, other than getting to watch Whistlespeak early, was that Captain Burnham herself, Sonequa Martin-Green, was there. And so we got to see her, and she did, about like a half an hour?
Yeah, it was
40
a half
minutes
hour.
Or so of talking and taking questions from the audience. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really wonderful time. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye out for these things. If you're in a town where they're doing something like this, they did something similar with the Lower Decks last year that I got to go to.
And I had to work. My work decided to destroy me at the last minute, so I couldn't go.
And the Lower Decks was in multiple cities, but it was sort of a similar format. It was really fun. And
so this was like the Lower Decks one?
This was more fancy. The Lower Decks was more like popcorn movie theater style. This was more cocktail party.
They did have free popcorn and canned spring water.
Yes, I still have that canned spring water.
Oh, really? I drank mine.
I was like, I'm not going to drink this water now, but we'll drink it later.
He doesn't drink water.
I don't know. Water's not good.
I've never seen him drink any water.
Just drink a bunch of Coca-Cola.
Have you ever like had so much soda that one day you start drinking water and you're like, what the fuck is this?
But
you drink a lot of water, Jesse.
But that was all very fun. We were.
Oh, aren't you fancy? Aren't you special, Jesse? Look, everybody, Jesse's a water drinker. Let's pay attention to him.
Check out.
I didn't say that.
Check out our social media if you want to see some pictures. Fun pictures of Dan
pictures.
And I got some fun pictures of Miss Martin Green.
It's more beautiful than I could have imagined.
And it's got Star Trek on all sorts of social media.
That clip was in reference to pictures of us.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't paying attention to what was the clip.
That's sweet.
Play it again.
It's more beautiful than I could have imagined.
Ah, yes.
The pictures of us, you and me together.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
It was
I've seen
cute.
Those
it was
pictures.
Pretty charming.
Yeah.
but then, of course, the other cool thing was we got to see Whistlespeak early. And, of course, the hilarious thing
we got to see it before everybody else. And they trusted us not to spoil it for people on Twitter. And you know what? We didn't do it because we're respectful.
We are respectful. We deserve, we're good people.
We deserve it. We deserve every all good things that come
whatever
to us.
Whatever you get. It's about
and you deserve whatever we give you.
Okay, so partly why this was amusing was, look, it was a great opportunity, but partly why it was amusing was that we had already set up this whole thing where I was going to be out of town, so we weren't going to be able to cover whistle speak because I just wasn't going to be here when it was made available on Thursday. But then Dan and I got to see it early anyway.
Yeah, right.
But okay, we weren't able to like throw together a show real quick, mm-hmm. and that's fine. We're doing it this week.
Are we?
Yes. And we're about to do that because hell I was going to say, then we got to see Whistle Speak. I got to watch it again a couple times in the last few days. Mm-hmm. And I really loved it. I thought it was a great episode.
Yeah, it was.
A great episode for them to pick to show in the theater. Like, it took advantage of being on that big screen.
Like, first of all, right from the first shot when it was like the dark background and it was like the it was like they were just showing close ups of their faces around the thing, and like there was like light reflecting off the testy flashy digi thing they were doing, and so it was like all black, but then all the light was coming from the thing they were looking at, and it was like it was really like surreal.
It's a very well directed episode,
and that worked really well on the big screen. Watching the ship zapping around, that's always great. Inside the temple, like really was a, that didn't look cheap at all to me. Like it looked
none of the CGI, none of the external shots, it all
and
looked fantastic.
The set building of the inside of the temple I thought looked really really good on the because it didn't have like a CG look or anything.
You know,
and just the whole outside vibe, they did a good job at
last week. Or last episode, I should say.
It smells funny in here.
You're having a stroke.
It's beyond that. There's like all your toppings.
The onions and stuff. Big bag of mayonnaise.
Or the Vegemite, big jar. The whatever I'm smelling, it's new and different.
Okay. So, last episode, I complained a little bit. I commented on the fact that I thought we were getting a little short shrift when it came to external establishing shots, particularly of the ship, you know, the classic thing you associate with Star Trek, where you see the Enterprise all floating in orbit around the planet and you see, oh, it's a blue planet this week, or it's an orange planet.
It's
this
a green.
Week. And it seemed that in a lot of the episodes leading up to this, it's not that we weren't getting external shots, but they were all like really close up to the ship. They weren't establishing shots. You know, they weren't as many of those wide shots. In Whistle Speak and Erica, they do a lot. They make up for a lot. Yeah. So I take back, I remove my critique because now we got to see a bunch of really cool external establishing shots that I thought they did a very, very good job.
Some big ships.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm chewing the rest of my Vegemite sandwich.
Oh, I've done far worse, sir.
Is that what you're leaning all back?
Yeah, because it's like pickles, onions, mayonnaise, Vegemite.
You know, they can't smell through the microphone.
We can't smell it, baby.
I mean, we can, but the audience can.
I'm smelling something.
Yeah, Jesse can describe the odors.
It's not like I'm sitting right next to you smelling your breath. But
you know, the more I eat it, the more I think that it needs to be, like Isaac said, like just a very thin amount. Even with all the toppings. You just want it to kind of hint at you.
I've heard from some folks saying that you should put butter on the toast first, then the Vegemite on top of the butter.
Mm-hmm. Just like thin, that butter might,
thin layer of each.
Might be interesting. Maybe a bit of prosciutto.
A bit of this, that, or the other thing.
This weekend I'm going to try it with the yellow mustard and the barbecue sauce. Anyway.
This weekend?
Weekend.
Put some prosciutto.
Nothing you said was a problem in any way. Just for some reason, my brain was like, Dan's like getting his plans together for the weekend.
This weekend, I'm going to eat a sandwich with mustard.
I'm going to plan this next sandwich. But
great.
All right. Real quick, as we get into this discussion of Whistle Speak, I did want to note that Grayson...
The Whistle Speak.
Fucking Christ. That Grayson, who gifted you with that Vegemite that you're nibbling on over there, he also aimed to make some predictions. You know, just to clarify, last week, since we weren't here, we pre-recorded a predictions episode, predictions in quotes, because we ended up talking about food a lot for some reason.
And we are again this episode, too, talking about Vegemite.
Well, that's because you made a fucking sandwich.
Well, because of the Vegemite we talked about last week.
Vegemite sandwich.
Yeah, well, anyway.
I come from the land down under.
We had the prediction episodes, and so Grayson tweeted us noting that he he, you know, after he saw the promo for the episode, you know, the little clip they show you, and that's what we had to work with. He said this is what he thought it was going to be about, and he shows the notes that he wrote down while after watching the promo. He said, "Okay, Whistle Speak. I think this is a throwback to the one where Wesley steps on the grass and is sentenced to death. The one called Justice.
Yeah.
Or the episode of the Orville where Lamar is arrested for getting downvoted after humping a statue."
Oh, I remember that one too. Yeah.
So that was his prediction.
That it was going to be like they were going to get in trouble.
No, and I was like, I responded. I was like, yeah, and as it turns out, it was more like The Lottery. Remember that story, The Lottery?
Yeah.
And did you ever see the movie, too, that they showed us in class?
I vaguely remember it. Yeah. For those around the... I don't know how common this is outside of the English-speaking world, but in certainly in American English classes, at some point, they make you read the book The Lottery, or the story.
It's an American story.
And the joke and the gag in the story is everyone's excited about this lottery, and the whole village is getting together for the lottery, and everyone's like super excited about it. And then at the end, it turns out whoever wins the lottery gets beaten to death or whatever. They get murdered and sacrificed.
They get stoned, I think.
It could be that they have a food problem and they have to conserve the food.
Well, whatever the reason. This is the Whistle Speak does a variation on that. And I think it does it in a... I mean, I know it's one component of the episode, but I really enjoy it.
Wait. If you had a food problem, why would you only kill one person? You'd kill more people than
you
want.
Yeah, you totally would. You'd
but not
kill
if it's
a whole bunch of people.
Not if you're appeasing the gods.
No, Jesse, but it's based on what Jesse said. Jesse said it's because of... They do it because they have a food problem, is what Jesse said.
Yeah, but you can have maybe you kill the person to sacrifice to the gods to get more food, to get good crops.
Oh, get good crops.
I thought he meant, if you do it all magically.
I thought he meant so there was less people.
Okay, well, how about...
That would be like actually scientific.
See, what they should do during these sacrificing things is they should eat the dead body, because that would nourish
them. That would be even more like realistic.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Well, okay. Now, I don't want to interrupt us, but we do have to take a break. Well. I know we just got started, but we have to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about all sorts of whistle speak things.
Whistle speak.
We'll talk about and especially how this episode, in a very interesting way, I think, is presenting two different sides of the coin of spirituality in terms of the positives and negatives of spirituality. We'll get in more into that when we get back in just a moment. Be right back. You're good?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, Dan, you said you're good, so I started the clock. So we are now officially back.
We are back.
Hello.
Greetings, compeers.
We are back and ready to go.
Compeers.
Talking about Whistle Speak. To you, it's old. You're bored of this. The audience is like, what the fuck? This is from last week, this show.
I know.
No, these guys gonna move
it's
on
fine. There's still podcasts who haven't even released theirs.
You're a little shit, you know that?
Yeah. Whistle Speak. Okay. All right. Whistle Speak.
Who are you speaking to?
I thought this episode had a very DS9, TNG, TOS kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, it did. You were mentioning something about two sides of spirituality. Both the A and B story were dealt with spirituality.
Yes.
Yeah. Like literally.
That's why I said that.
Oh, you didn't say why, though. You didn't say because of the A and B.
Well.
I thought that, I mean, I did say this.
He's sowing the seeds,
the episode is presenting both. Not both, two different perspectives.
Yeah, you said both perspectives, implying that they were opposing two different sides of the same coin.
Well, yeah, I specifically said two different sides of the coin, because in the case of the people, what's the name of the people? I forget. Burnham mentioned.
The Halemnites.
The Halemnites.
The Halemnites.
They're on planet Halema.
Mm-hmm.
The Halemnites.
The Halemnites.
Welcome. To 1,001 Halemnites.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
The Halemnites can't maintain this technology. They're going to get wiped out sooner or later. Either way, okay. We have to do this.
There's been an entry in Dan's fast-speaking Burnham. This is a new, this is a new thing, a new program that Dan has developed.
I think there was only two this episode that I remembered. It was...
The Halemnites can't maintain this technology. They're going to get wiped out sooner or later. Either way, we have to do this. We are not letting them die for no reason.
Yeah.
And we are not letting them die for no reason.
So, the Halemnites.
We're alone, Discovery. We don't have much time.
There were three of them.
The way the spirituality has evolved in their culture, I'm not speaking about spirituality generically. I'm saying their spirituality has led to this concept of people, frankly, needlessly sacrificing themselves in order to appease the gods, which is a potentially negative version of what can happen. Whereas with Culber, they're exploring the positive aspects of somebody being able to, you know, sort of examine
that thinking. I couldn't tell if they were trying to make it seem like Stamets, like, didn't understand what Culber was going through, even though Stamets was kind of like, he was like, the brain's really complicated. You can think all sorts of stuff. And you can think all sorts of stuff and, like, you know, just have fun with it. But then Culber later to Book was like, Stamets doesn't understand. Yeah. So I guess Stamets was looking at it from, like, the scientific perspective of brains can think whatever they want. And Culber was going for something more spiritual. But I still sort of got that feeling that Stamets was also saying, like, the universe is crazy. Like, sure. Yeah. Like, I didn't get the impression that Stamets didn't understand.
Well, it seemed to me that Stamets had his own sort of revelations, and it wasn't quite hitting it for Dr. Hugh. Like, it still wasn't doing it. Like Stamets is like, the brain is more complicated than we could even comprehend, and that just, you know, that wasn't really doing it for him. Like it's still, there's still something else besides just the scientific, like, science is awesome, but like...
Yeah. I felt like, though, that was Stamets' way of sort of expressing a similar thought, though. Like, it was his way of saying it.
Well, he was trying, but it still wasn't enough for Dr. Hugh, I think.
I have a minor critique of this storyline, which I think goes into what you guys are talking about, in that as much as I'm enjoying it, I like the idea of them exploring this concept. Part of the problem is it's really difficult to convey what Culber is feeling.
Yeah, it really is.
Right? Because they're trying to do it, and in both in exposition and in acting, it's just an extremely difficult thing to convey somebody having a spiritual or near spiritual revelation.
Because at first it seems like he's having a bad time, and then he's like, no.
He's saying, like, I feel really good.
Yeah, it's like, no, it's great. Like, it's, yeah.
And I think the other thing is that they play this, they do this thing. And first of all, they had this, I thought, really great scene with his abuela, which I thought was just wonderful.
It's classic Star Trek to, like, talk to a hollow and like figure out some stuff by talking to a hollow.
So, although I'm not sure exactly how I feel. I don't know if it's awesome or terrifying to speak to, like, a dead relative who's like,
it's been like somebody personal. It's usually Galileo.
And also this person, the implication is they have mind pattern they can think like the person.
So this is what I was wondering, and I feel like it's not, I was wondering if it's either a model they trained on the grandma based upon historical records of her. I tend to think it's the other thing where it's like they analyze the fundamental components that make up her brain and sort of synthesize them, you know?
And the implication is it's not even her brain, it's his remembrance of her.
Oh, really?
Because they're scanning his brain. Okay.
So
that's why
he's right. so like, yeah.
It's yeah,
like,
so it's not AI as we know it now, where it's just a collection of data that has been, a model's been trained off of. It's actually looking at how someone's brain waves function and sort of like synthesizing that.
If they do it too well, it's like, what happens when you turn them off? Are you murdering them?
Oh no. it's that's a bummer.
Or do they exist in some sort of existential horror limbo?
That's like terrifying.
Infinity. Like every time they're just like in the memory module, it just like feels like an infinity.
So well, what's his name feel? DS9 Tony Bang Bang.
Vic Fontaine.
Yeah.
Well, he thinks he's Moriarty. Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, but does he feel? He seems to like being turned off from time to time.
But also, they were talking about how this was a grief alleviation therapeutic. But like when Barkley did that shit and when Geordi did that shit, everyone was all weirded out. But
but they were trying to fuck them. Like the Culber's not trying to fuck his abuela.
Well, I mean, okay, but like, let's say it was your wife. Let's say it was someone's wife that died, and they did that for therapy. Ah. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. You know, you've introduced.
But that's fucked up, dude.
You've introduced a very thorny philosophical question. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a little outside of the scope of this episode, but I'm intrigued.
So I guess like. Maybe under the supervision of a doctor, it's okay. It's kind of like how certain like medications, like I don't know, some they do ketamine injections or whatever they're called,
LSD.
where they're supposed to deal with depression and anxiety with ketamine, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, you don't want to do it yourself, you want to do it under their supervision. So maybe that's like that, but still, it is kind of weird. Like, would you have sex with your therapy wife, your dead therapy wife?
It's a good question.
You're dead. Good question. Your dead therapy.
Maybe,
hologram.
Maybe we'll save that conversation.
Hologram.
Holograms.
We'll save that conversation for the Patreon feed.
Hologram. Holograms.
Where if we're gonna get in
it's
trouble,
just a crazy idea.
We're gonna get in trouble with people who are paying us money to get in trouble. But anyway, I enjoyed that aspect of it. However, his abuela, she says, "Look, I raised you to be a man of science. Why don't you, you know, check yourself out?" Basically, you know, that's the conclusion he comes to. And so he examines the physical. But then what I didn't like so much about this story is he examines the physical and then it jumps immediately to the spiritual without the intervening investigations of the psychological and the philosophical, because he did go through a profound experience. And that's why I'm with you, Dan, in sort of supporting Stamets. Like, I think Stamets was like, in his own way, he was like, yeah, dude, it's cool, man. Yeah. Like, the brain is some crazy shit. And like, I think it's, if you're going to have this conversation, it's a stronger conversation if you also examine how somebody's psychology might be impacted by the events they experienced and how their philosophy might be shaken and converted into or changed into a different form.
So, okay, so if Stamets is looking at it all scientifically and then, but Kolber, like Jesse, you were saying, Kolber's looking at it more like on a spiritual soul level of the soul. Now, is there really any difference between those two perspectives? Like, whether you're coming from it from like, anything can happen because the brain's crazy, or you can say God does crazy things. Yeah. Both of them are saying like there's a bunch of unknown shit that can cause some shit we don't understand. Yeah. So one person would explain it. Now, I'm not trying to say religion and science are the same thing by any means. I would never suggest that at all.
Hey, Jesse, do you think that Dan was trying to say that religion and science are the same thing?
No, I was hoping he was.
But no. When you say that the world, everything's crazy and we don't understand what's going on, whether you're saying it's because from a scientific perspective or a religious perspective, I think it's like you were saying, Patrick, it's two different ways of looking at the same issue, and basically. It's just how one person sees it and the other person sees it.
The difference is in the qualia, right? Which is the subjective experience of the individual. Mm-hmm. And that's why, as much as I thought that they didn't go as deep as they could have in examining this issue, I thought that the way it resolved at the end with Book just sort of casually telling Kolber, dude, it can just be your thing. You don't got to be stressing about it. I think that's a philosophy I can really get behind. I'm very materialist scientific perspective, but I also think it's like, you know, everyone's got their right to do the thing that they need to do for themselves and interpret the world in the way that works for them. If they want to ask my advice, I'm happy to give them my perspective on how I think it makes sense to interpret the world. But that doesn't mean that the other things are invalid, right?
Are there no gods?
Stamets is like a guy who's like, you know, one of the greatest minds of his generation. Like, he came up with the whole spore drive thing. So he's dealing with complicated stuff all the time. So, you know, it's like he's...
And he doesn't live in time. He's all like unstuck in time with his like special genes.
I still find it disorienting myself sometimes.
Extra weirdness going on. So he's used to like a lot of dealing with a lot of complicated stuff, and he's really smart and he can deal with that. So he's, you know, he's already in awe of the fact that like my brain is so complicated. Everybody's brain, you know, like the universe is so great and interesting and complicated, and like, you know,
mycelial network is some crazy shit.
And so that's enough for him. Like, you know, he's seen his own thing.
hey Jesse, when was the last time you saw your own thing?
You know, like he's found his own meaning in the complexity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's enough. It just wasn't doing it for
Kolber. And I got the impression that it was one of those things for Kolber. Perhaps what caught him off guard, and again, maybe this is just my interpretation, maybe this is what I'm reading from the performance, but I got the impression that it was one of those situations where Kolber got an answer to a question that he wasn't asking. He didn't know. Basically is one of those things where he thought he was fine, and then something happens to him and he's like, oh wait, I don't think I was fine before. I think I'm fine. I'm fine now. Right. And he was sort of wrestling with the, why did this experience make me feel? Cause he like, I think you mentioned it, Dan, he keeps bringing up, he's like, no, I'm feeling kind of extra awesome lately. And yeah, I mean, I'm glad it's not a brain tumor, like pushing on his, like, you know, euphoria gland.
Well, when Book was saying, he goes, it's an odd quirk that the human tendency this human tendency to consider something less meaningful if it's just for yourself. Now, when he said that, I had two thoughts. One, I was like, that sounds really wise. But like, if you take it like in most literal sense, like if a bunch of monsters are flying around that only I can see, that's less meaningful than if everyone could see them, yes. You know, because if everyone could see them, the whole world's at risk. But if I can only see them, it means that like I got something going on inside my head.
That's so, because you're a human, you see. He's not, you know, you what? Only have a human perspective.
As opposed well, to I don't book. Even, but I mean, I don't understand how that really furthers what do you swear?
I'm just talking.
My whole point is that like, look, he's saying people think something is less meaningful if it's just for them. Yeah. And that's stupid that they would think that. And I'm saying it makes sense because if I see an apparition and nobody okay. else sees it, it is less important because it's only affecting me. If you see an apparition that everyone sees,
okay. well, that's then that very has, rational,
that has
yes.
then that means it probably has okay. some wait a second. That means yeah. it probably has some kind of effect on the entire world yeah. versus if it's just me, it's probably something in my head. And so, I guess, there's a difference.
Yeah, yeah I get yeah. that. Now,
but it sounds wise.
No. I get what you're saying. However, it's also that's not the specific situation here. But you're right that
it's what he says.
No. But Culber is not saying he's seeing apparitions. Culber is saying he's got he's feeling a vibe, and Book is just saying like your vibe. You feel whatever vibe you want to feel. That's all good. Now. I hadn't considered, and I do fully agree with you, that, yeah, the scenario becomes a little different if you've got, like a little friendly ghosts that are following you around, and they're giving you advice, and you're like, you're not getting advice from your little ghosts? That might start to become a distancing mechanism where you're no longer operating in reality.
Well, if everybody in the world got the same feeling that Culber had at the exact same time, there would be total harmony and unity. In the whole world, because they'd all think the same thought at the same time. So that would be more significant. Because if everyone thought the same thing at the same time, that would be insane.
Okay. That would be insane.
Dan, you're freaking
me. Most important thing is to work in harmony with the rest of your compeers.
You're freaking me out. What'd you think of that term, compeer?
It was all whistling.
Okay.
When they were saying you must work in harmony, that worked because they're whistling, and that's like music and harmony. Yeah. Harmony. You see what I mean?
Because
he was like, you got to work in harmony, just like you got to whistle in tune.
You got to work in harmony.
Didn't that sound like fucking like it sounded like R2-D2?
Yeah, dude, it was totally Star Wars.
That sounded like fucking R2-D2.
I was a big fan of this episode. I am a big fan of this episode. This is perhaps one of my favorite Discovery episodes. I really like this episode. My main critique of this episode is for an episode titled Whistle Speak. Mm. There's almost no whistle speak in the episode. Nope. It's some cultural fluff. Not fluff. That's unfair. It's a very interesting cultural aspect that they apply to this group of people. The Hegelians, what are they?
Helemnites.
The Helemnites?
Hegelians.
It doesn't go anywhere. They don't do anything with it.
But then they don't. after the first 10 seconds, you don't hear any more whistling.
Yeah.
There's no whistling at the end. I thought they'd have to like whistle to find the clue activate the machine.
Well, there was a whistle at the very end after the Discovery yes. zapped away.
Yeah, like that was cute.
Right, I know because so they whistle and okay, there was this part that was confusing me where the group goes, "We've come here from afar. Let my voice call you home." Then they're whistling a bit. And they go, "We've traveled from the dust. Come rest, you must. We journeyed from the storm. In the summit, you'll be warm." Yeah. Why the fuck would their whistling translate and rhyme in a foreign language? You know what I mean? Like,
Vern?
Like, if I was whistling...
Maybe that's just how the universal translator works.
Yeah. Like, if I was whistling and it translated to English, there's a low probability that my whistling would translate into an English rhyme. Not, let alone some alien language. Like, I didn't get that...
But it's pretty easy to rhyme in
English, I don't get why they made it rhyme, because it doesn't make any sense. I know things in shows are just for effect, but that was just confusing to me. I found that confusing.
Well, I chalked that up to the... That's in the same category as having secret implants in their eyeballs that have tricorders that occasionally glow blue so the audience can be reminded that they glow blue, but they wouldn't be a very secret thing if they didn't. So that's just a meta thing, right?
No, but I mean, this was a little, this to me was straight up confusing. Like, I was just like, is there, why would it, I didn't, I mean, the tricorder thing made sense in the sense that, like, I didn't question how it was possible.
There's
and,
different qualia, and the different subjective experiences. No,
and
experiences. The reason,
and you're right, it wouldn't turn blue, but it was like, that's like a cool effect so someone can be like, reminded, be like, oh yeah, there's a tricorder there. But there's no reason for it to rhyme.
But there is a reason.
There's
but,
none. It doesn't tell you anything.
No, no. The,
at least the blue tricorder in the eye tells you that there's a tricorder in the
okay,
eye.
Okay, no, look, for both, both serve the same.
Surely you know that.
Both are non-in-universe. They're out of universe. They are meta textual things that are meant to guide the audience. The glowing eye meant to remind the audience that they have secret tricorders. So that's how they can see all this crazy stuff. And the rhyming is meant to get us to understand that this is a medieval peasant style culture.
Yeah. And I'm saying
that's
that,
the vibe. They're trying to set the mood for us.
Yeah. And I think it, they took it too far. I think it was
well,
just, it was, it, they took it so far to a point where it's just like, I don't have any idea how you're going to like, why, I just kept thinking of why does it rhyme? That's all I kept thinking about. And I know
this is not the first time it's happened in Star Trek.
I know they did it for effect, but I'm saying some effects that are ridiculous at least make sense to me that they did it. For that, like, it was a real stretch, like, to try to make it seem like some quaint little medieval, like, lute playing scene or something. Like, no, I didn't buy that. Because, first of all, this is the episode where, like, you got to listen to people be miserable the whole time. Like, all the fucking coughing everywhere.
I mean, that was only for a brief part. And, well, yeah, actually, there was during the race.
Yeah.
Well, how about...
You know what I thought was silly?
What did you think was silly?
So they're racing up, like, to the temple. Yeah. And, like, first it shows, like, this, like, pinnacle that's all, like, steep.
Yeah.
But then, like, what they're actually racing up isn't steep at all. It's not, like, you can't even tell that it's necessarily a mountain. They're just sort of, like, going up a hill. Yeah.
And when Tilly and Rava finally got into the room, and they panned out, the room was closed, they panned out, they were at the very top of this
high summit, which is, like, the edge of something.
Which is presumably the tallest structure in, like, the land or something. Yeah. And, like, somehow they got all the way up there. They didn't really sort of skip
I found that a little confusing.
And, like, they did all this research.
Well, they did that for the textual purposes to let you know that they're way up and that's how impressive the structure is and let you know like how close to the gods it was symbolic of them being close to the gods.
To me, it was symbolic of them filming the episode and then the special effects guys were like, let's make it super tall.
They did all this stuff to learn about this culture, but they still like skipped the fact that there's like a sacrifice.
Yeah,
like, get out of there, Tilly.
I think it's super important to point out that Tilly's act of kindness inadvertently condemning Rava to death was fascinating, and it's similar to Burnham. Burnham immediately jumping at the chance to start this race without realizing it was a lottery type situation, and which I think is a good xenoanthropologist wouldn't do that if they're anything like regular old anthropologists.
I think that for them to rhyme the whistles and make it rhyme in English, it was just the scriptwriters being like, hey, it would be cool if it rhymed right here. That's what I think.
Yeah. No, I mean,
if it whistles, it rhymes.
I don't think anyone is fundamentally disagreeing with that point. However, we do have another episode to talk about, want to finish this up.
What would be
swiftly as possible?
What would the whistling version of rhyming be? Would that just be melody?
How about this? How about this, Dan?
You're being very abrasive.
Since you're all about the music right now, I did want to play a clip because I do the music in this episode. Kicked fucking ass, all up and down the whole episode. But I really like this section where it transitions from crazy adventure music into the whimsical peasant music. It's a short clip.
Sacrifice.
So cool. Flying through the sky. And the camera zooms down. Zooms through the treetops and is like, oh, yay! Look at this.
Good morning, compeers.
Good morning, compeers.
Yeah, well, you were asking what I thought about all the compeers. That was kind of an interesting little thing that they had. It was like,
stay strong, my good compeer.
Don't give up now, compeer. You look frightened, compeer.
May you remind the gods of the mother compeer.
The journey of the mother compeer.
Greetings, compeers.
Those are some compeers for you.
Just a few.
Just a few compeers here and there.
Anytime they make up a word in Star Trek, you know, like the local term or whatever, or some variation on a word, there's always a bit of a period where I'm uncomfortable with it, but then I get used to it. Then it's like, okay, cool. I'm down with it.
Yeah, it's always a little screwy, and then you...
They were saying the Halemnites had... dust is one of their words for pain. They were saying they had different words for pain. Because
they got
pain.
All them dust storms.
It's a bunch of dust on that.
So at one point, they said, we come from the dust. That's like they're saying, we come from the pain. Mm. Or do you think they literally meant dust in that part?
Interesting. Well, I guess we don't know enough to
that one lady literally had dust all up.
Okay.
Oh, man, yeah.
That was weird.
Okay, so first of all, the sonic percussions, that just looked like one of those like melody bowls or whatever. Yeah. What do you call those?
Because that's precisely
a singing bowl.
Singing bowl, yeah. That was a singing bowl. You can get those on Amazon.
That was wild. Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they were able to use it in such a way that it acted like a sonic wave that they would have in their technology. It somehow was able to knock the gunk loose. So they must have had a special alloy in their singing bowl that was able to do it. I want to know why Burnham passed out, but nobody else did.
Yeah, that
Tilly didn't pass
that was
out.
Also,
she was not used to it, maybe.
Yeah, but Tilly didn't. It was only Burnham.
Maybe Tilly's, you know, Tilly's
and more constitution.
Like rock and, yeah, she got
Tilly's to rock and roll.
Constitution because it's a fucking RPG.
Yeah, because got a high constitution. Rating.
They're in a medieval village.
They kept talking about the Serenity Prayer. They're not talking about that one Serenity Prayer.
Serenity now.
Well, it's like God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. That one. No, they have their own set of Serenity Prayers, and they have one for every tower, which means there's 5 Serenity Prayers. Do you think
it's a different program?
Do you think there were originally 7 Serenity Prayers, but they were like, we only have 5 towers, and so they made it, they got rid of 2 of them? Do you think they
ran out of the towers? Why would you even propose such a thing?
Because why would they have 5 Serenity Prayers for 5 towers?
My mind is boggled, because it totally makes sense to have, oh, there's 5 towers, there should be 5
prayers.
Yeah,
I know.
Why would they have 7?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Why are they introducing the 7?
No, and it makes sense that they would have 5 and 5.
Yes,
right? So they match.
A numerology.
But like, why are there only 5? What if there were actually, it's like the 12 steps in a book when you read the 12-step step guide.
If there were 12 towers,
wait,
they would have 12
no,
prayers.
No, listen. Listen to what I'm saying first.
I am listening.
If you're reading a 12-step, a 12 self-help 12-step book thing, what if there's actually 13 steps to good health? Why do they limit themselves to 12? It's always 12 steps. That's my point. What if
in this case, the Denobulans, they needed 5 towers to protect the whole planet.
But why are there...
So they have 5 towers.
It would make sense if there was 5 Serenity Prayers and then they made a tower for each Serenity Prayer.
Yeah, but they
prayer.
Didn't make the towers. The Denobulans made the towers.
I know. That's why I'm saying it doesn't make any sense. What if there just happened to be in the world, there's 7 Serenity Prayers.
I have no clue what you're saying. My mind is completely and utterly boggled.
No, because like, okay, do you understand this concept of this?
The Denobians come
and they build 5
towers.
Wait a second. Let me fucking finish what I'm saying.
And the locals
let me,
revere
you,
the
you
towers.
You keep saying you don't understand what I'm saying, but then you don't let me finish my fucking sentence.
Yeah.
Let me say what I'm saying and stop trying to think of what I'm saying before I'm saying it.
No, you've said it multiple times.
No,
I still don't understand it.
No, okay. Do you understand this? There's a 12-step help program, self-help 12-step program. Yeah. Why are there 12 steps? Why are there always 12 steps?
I couldn't tell you.
It's a convention. It's a convention to make them 12 steps. There could be 13. Yeah. There could be 11.
And this is totally unrelated to this.
No,
episode.
You're doing it again. You're doing it again.
All
Let
right,
me fucking
finish.
How is
this related?
Because, like, they're just, like, there's 5 towers. Okay. Why would there only be 5 serenity prayers? What if there's 7? Like, why does it have to be related to the number of towers?
Because presumably, and the implication, which I think is very strong, is the only purpose of the prayer is directly related to the existence of the towers.
It would be like saying there's 5 towers, therefore there's 5 elements of matter. It's like, why?
No, it wouldn't. It would be that 5 magical towers, from these people's perspective, 5 magical towers appeared that made their world a paradise, and they know that the rain comes from those towers. They think it's a God thing, so they pray to those specific towers. Like, there might be a number of prayers for different
so
temples.
how do you know there's like what if there's a, I mean, how could they sum up their entire like prayers worth of thoughts into 5 prayers?
You're trying to mix logic and religion.
Nobody said they're the only prayers that exist. They said these are specific prayers that are associated with the towers. There's
right,
5
and I'm
towers,
saying,
so there's 5
and I'm,
prayers.
And I'm saying, what if there was actually originally like 10 prayers, not serenity prayers, just 10 prayers, and they only picked 5 of them to make
then
them serenity
prayers? Then why do they have to pick from an existing prayer? They can make a brand new fucking prayer for these brand new fucking buildings.
I don't understand how you can sum up the universe's thoughts in 5 prayers.
I don't think anyone has suggested that. There's nothing in this episode that suggested that they are limited to 5 specific prayers. These are prayers that are associated with these specific
towers. Do you think
towers.
Those prayers say different things?
Yeah, they're probably slightly different because they're like, this is the Tower of the Eagle, and this is the Tower of the Walrus, and this is the Tower of the Vegemite.
Okay, so they said different things. So they addressed five things. What if there were two more things they didn't address?
I have no idea how to respond.
The Tower of the Walrus.
I have no idea how to respond.
Like, they prayed, like, they were all different types of animals. They were prayed, like, this animal's this, this animal's this. We picked the five magic animals, but right. Meanwhile, the grackle over here is all sad because nobody picked it.
Okay. Well,
I picked the grackle.
We will have to leave this unresolved because we do have to move along home, and there are a couple other things we want to discuss about this episode.
I want to discuss the Prime Directive.
Let's discuss the Prime Directive. That's a good thing to discuss.
Okay, Burnham says, back to the sonic percussion, Burnham says that they can't use a sonic percussion, or I think it was Tilly said that. It was either Tilly or Burnham said they can't use a sonic percussion to heal the woman because of the Prime Directive. Yeah,
Tilly said, oh, if she just got this easy thing, mm-hmm. she'd be cured, and then Burnham was the one who's like, oh, you know we can't do that.
Yeah, because of the Prime
Directive. Tilly was like, you know, you're right.
So are you saying that they would let her die?
Yes. And here's the thing.
And this is related to what you said about Homeward, the TNG episode with Paul Sorvino. Yeah, and you were saying it was bullshit that Picard and Starfleet was going to let this planet die
but here's the
because
difference.
Of the Prime Directive.
No, but the episode is in part exactly about the nuanced difference between two different scenarios. Because Burnham, and I think she's right. I think she's right if you're going by the spirit of the Prime Directive, which is, by the way, complicated and often doesn't work in any reasonable way. But if you're going by the spirit of it, Burnham is saying this individual person who is through no fault of Starfleet or anybody else, just by the nature of living in this world, this person is going to maybe die because of injuries they've suffered in their average normal daily life. That you don't intervene, that makes sense. However, it's a totally different question, as I said with Homeward, when it's the genocide of the entire planet. If everyone's going to die, then that's what Burnham was facing at the end, which was, yes, she was trying to save Tilly and Rava, but fundamentally Burnham was trying to say, we know how to fix this. We know how to save you people, and otherwise it's broken. If we don't fix it, you guys are all going to die. And
the Denobulans have already intervened.
Exactly. And like, so the combination of those two things may justify
But I mean, Rayner specifically said, well, we're going to have to tell Starfleet because is a Prime Directive violation. So
because as Picard noted, remember when we talked about Homeward, the whole thing Picard was like, oh yeah, let's just let all these people fucking die.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he'll have to fill out forms with Starfleet because, as we know, Starfleet has a really bizarre relationship with the Prime Directive.
Yeah. So, but it's saying, but Starfleet is still don't agree with Starfleet's view of the Prime Directive, because according to Starfleet, they were going to let them die at the end of this episode.
No, but I do agree with the way Burnham navigated this, because I do think
it's less that you have a problem with Starfleet. It's more that you think the writing is inconsistent or something.
No.
Not for Discovery, just Star Trek and the Prime Directive.
Well, first of all, yes, it is. Absolutely. They've done a million different things in a million different ways, and they always get away with it when it feels good, which is fine.
Pues sí, claro.
But I do think that they explore both options here, which is Burnham's not willing to interfere when it's sort of an individual whatever. She is willing to interfere if you're talking about the destruction of an entire culture.
I
personally would, my philosophy would agree with that.
I mean, considering like life itself is at stake, I think the Prime Directive is really the least of their worries in this situation.
What I don't like about the Prime Directive is, okay, what I like about it is the idea of non-interference, the idea of not unnecessarily monkeying around with people's business.
Hey, quit monkeying around.
That's fine. That's a good idea. That's like, how do you not be a colonialist, right? How do you not strip a planet full of their resources, even if you think you're being beneficial and, oh, we're bringing the medical supplies or whatever. I agree with that in principle. I think that most of the scenarios we see where it's like, oh, the whole planet's going to blow up. No, I think that negates the whole reason you have the Prime Directive is that you don't damage the people. If the people are going to die anyway, I think if you have a mechanism to save them and it just happens they're going to find out there's aliens, it's like, yeah, all right, their culture is going to be impacted, but they'll be alive.
I think they can deal with that.
Now, by the way, that's my position. I think you can form a totally valid argument on the opposing side and a stricter version of it.
But you'd be wrong.
I just don't agree with that. All right, any other...
No.
Last points. I did really want to call out June Laporte as Rava. They are excellent. Mm-hmm. Both the character and the actor go by they them pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
the character of Rava was performed exactly out of like a Deep Space Nine episode or a TNG Planet of the Week episode. The brightness, the so naivete. Like sort of
headstrong, jumping right in, not thinking about it until the very end.
Yeah, something about it, the costumes, it felt really comfortable. It was a modern version of what we might see on a Story of the Week back in the 90s.
Sort of their view of like a pre-industrial space.
Well, people. I was talking about Rava's, that they're you know, sort of like jumping into everything.
Yes.
So busy. It's funny because they were trying to impress their father so much that I don't know if they realized that they kept like stepping all over his feet all the time.
Yes.
Like when they first met the people, they were telling Rava was telling them about like their family.
Yes.
And their mother and stuff, and the dad was like, just chill. Yeah, you know, let them settle. Right. He was saying let them settle, but really he was like, we don't know these people, just calm down. And then they were talking about Burnham was talking about giving thanks to the gods or whatever, and Ovas is like, yeah, you don't need to go in there. And then Rob is like pipes up, and they're like, well, you know,
you can do the race.
You can do the race, and the dad's just like, oh, come on.
I did.
And then he's like, just let him go. But just what? And then they're like, you know, in fact, we could do it tomorrow. Right. Like those three things in a row. Like their father three times tried to get them to stop, and they kept like just like bowling right through it.
And Tilly's relationship with Rava was really fantastic. Tilly,
you're a little shit, you know that.
Reinforcing her teacher credentials, right? Her mentor credentials, and obviously we're gonna learn a little bit more. She's gonna have some revelation that she's gonna take back to Starfleet Academy. That's gonna make her a better instructor and improve Starfleet Academy, and then that will go into her own TV show,
yay,
which will be cool. Oh, last thing.
I don't want to die.
Last thing before we go to break.
Well, I actually had one last thing.
Oh, I was going to say, do you have Tilly saying sangrai?
I actually played it earlier.
Oh, I didn't. I don't remember hearing it.
Sacrifice?
Yeah.
Sacrifice?
My favorite thing of the whole episode.
Sacrifice? Sacrifice? Sacrifice?
All right, your last thing, because we're late for a break, but I'm okay with that.
Words.
Sacrifice?
Words.
Sacrifice?
Words.
The other clues had words.
Words.
Well, Creel's file also mentioned he did work in weather technology for other worlds. The other clues had words. Well, Creel's file also mentioned he did work in weather technology for other worlds.
That's not the one I meant. I meant to play this one.
Weather technology for other worlds.
Words.
Weather technology for other worlds.
Words.
Symbols. I had more.
I was going to say... I wanted to play an episode of
Link the Things. How about that?
I want to play Duty or No Duty.
Okay.
Oh.
Let's take a break and then we'll do Nudie.
Nudie
or No Nudie when we get back, and then we can start into Eriga. I think Eriga is going to be a pretty
yeah.
Pretty
I
swift
think there's less to talk about. Yeah. With Eriga.
All right, we will be right back.
Yeah.
All right, we have returned.
We are returned.
We have returned, you know, from the break.
We have returned.
Ready for duty or nudie?
Ready for a zooty or
tooty fruity.
When they were like,
so we're going to Denobula.
I was like, yeah, Denobulans. And then I really want to see some.
Not necessarily.
I really want to see Denobulans. Okay, this is an episode of Duty or No Duty. Is this a duty or no duty?
I know you imagine much to you, but you have a duty.
That's a duty.
Jesse, duty or no duty? So you're saying no duty.
No duty.
I would say no duty.
I know you imagine what you wish to you, but you have a duty.
That's no duty. No I think duty. It's a unanimous agreement.
Duty. Yeah.
I thought this was an interesting sentence. I'll play a shorter version if you don't catch it the first time.
Okay. The USS Lockery just found Marlin Locke.
Admiral Vance requests that we jump to their location immediately.
Okay, lock in coordinates.
There was a word they kept saying over and over. I'll play the shorter version to see if you catch it.
The USS Lockery just found Marlin Locke.
Okay, lock in coordinates.
Lock.
Locker
is the ship.
Lock. As in the character.
Yes.
And lock.
As in lock.
The USS Lockery just found Marlin Locke.
Okay, lock in coordinates.
I didn't notice that. That's funny. Now I'm all aggravated.
Yeah, I know.
Fuck those guys.
There was some lore, but there's, I mean, it wasn't anything special. It was just stuff about Hellemnites and Denobulans no make weather. Oh yeah, there was the whole. Oh yeah, the whole way they found this whole thing was because they found distilled water, mm-hmm. and then there was nothing.
Which I thought was cute. That was pretty cute.
Yeah,
and I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean quite. It was very. I don't know. I enjoyed
because
that.
Yeah, because totally. they were saying, well, normally they use this iodide or something. They use some kind of silver something or other. What was it? It was they use some kind of thing to find the thing, and it makes it all dirty. Right. That's normally what happens.
Yes,
Jesse. What's going on with you?
Jesse's done with this conversation.
Okay, yeah,
he's ready to talk about.
They were saying weather towers seed clouds with silver iodide. It's dirty, so it couldn't. But this water was like not dirty, so it was like it couldn't be that. So the only other planet on the trade route between Denobula and other places was this planet where it was so arid they drew it from the air at a molecular level. Yes. Which, like, I mean. The fact that they knew it was a clue definitely does help you solve it because, well, it's like, mm-hmm. obviously there's an answer. And so, like, if they just pulled that out of nowhere, if they didn't even know it was, like, a specific game that they were playing with them, it would seem like a stretch to be able to make that connection. But I can kind of buy it because, like, because it's being presented to them as a clue that has an answer. Yeah. So it's like, because you could say, well, it must have come from an arid planet where water is clean. And you'd say like, well, there's so many of those planets. How do we know which one it is? But in this one, there just happens to be one. And that's not a coincidence because they left the clue for them to be able to find that one planet. Some of these clue solving.
This whole season is like this where the clues are cute, but
they get them the first time.
Yeah, you said it. Best, I'm paraphrasing now, but you're like, it makes sense because they've constructed it to make sense. You know, it feels that way. It feels like, okay, it's like you expected this group of people to get it. And by the way, in Eriga, which I also enjoyed, I thought Eriga was also a very enjoyable episode. We'll get to that in a second.
Chemicals come up that center column and mix with air and whatnot.
But like he says, whatnot.
But like the clue in Eriga. It's like, it also sort of doesn't make sense because it's like, wait, they knew 800 years ago that the library was going to be in the Badlands?
Beta Zed didn't have colonies 800 years ago.
Which I believe, that makes sense.
I don't understand why wouldn't they have colonies?
They just didn't have colonies. Not every planet has colonies.
But Beta Zed's pretty organized.
Yeah, but they don't need colonies.
They weren't expansive.
Ryza doesn't have colonies. I'm sure lots of places don't have colonies. Not everybody is terrible humans.
You don't have any colonies.
Or Romulans or Klingons invading every place.
The thing with the clues also is that... The fact that it's such a stretch to get it at all, that they always get it on the first try. There's some of the clues, like early on when Burnham found some planet.
People might quibble with first try, but I agree with you.
But like,
because they talk about it for like 2 minutes and they're like, okay, here it is.
Yeah. And like one was earlier was they were looking for a planet with a binary star and she found one, except it wasn't a binary star. Binary moon, but it was like only in this particular configuration. And they even said earlier in the episode, there's tons of planets with binary moons or whatever.
Two moons. And it was three moons, except it looked like two moons.
Yeah, for some reason, because it was three that looked like two, that made it the one. It's like there's thousands of these things. Just because there's three that looks like two, that doesn't mean it's the thing. Like, so the clues get a little bit kind of insane in that respect.
But. Well, Eriga, getting into Eriga, I do think this was another very well-directed episode, like the previous one, for the most part.
Hey, Starfleet.
Some really clever camera moves and I don't know. I'm not going to describe any particular scenes, but when you're watching this, I don't know. I found it a very interesting episode to watch. The production value again was high. Again, like I said this week, as with the last episode, a lot more really cool establishing shots from outside. So you kind of understood what was going on better than you do in some episodes. Just the geography of the episode I thought was
special offer
was really well done.
Discovery has some cool skylights.
Yeah, the skylight business, like the transition from outside of Discovery, like going into the skylight.
That was a really good transition.
And then later when the Breen ship shows up in the shadow.
I love that huge ship.
Really cool.
Although I have one, I don't know. Okay, I will say that when it zapped away at the very end, did you notice the other ships kind of moved?
They wobbled a little.
They wobbled. Now,
that
I thought
was cute.
That was a cool effect. I'm wondering if that would actually happen. I know it's like, would that actually happen in a
little warp turbulence?
Like, because...
You'd almost expect like a moving through, like just dragging this gravity bubble through space.
Right, but apparently,
who was it that called up and said that warp is actually the space around them moving or something like that? That was, we had someone left us a voicemail.
Somebody.
I was gonna say we had a caller. No, I can't remember who left us the voicemail.
Was it Kaki?
It might have been.
From Joy of Trek,
it might have been. I don't know. But like they were talking about how is space moving around the thing. I'm just
Our brains don't work.
I'm just wondering if it would be like space wind would be...
Space wind. Would be space wind. That sounds stinky.
Would be... with. I'm just wondering...
Jesse's going to cough himself to death. I'm just laugh cough.
I'm just wondering if space wind would actually be a side
effect. Space wind?
Oh my God.
There goes the planet.
Okay. Please, Patrick, please.
Yes. No, I like this space wind conversation.
I was wondering if space wind would be a natural side effect of warp. That's what I was trying to say.
Is that lady from the whistle screen? Or is that from this episode? Is that Locke?
That's from Whistle Speak.
That's the lady from... Is that Honora? I think the character's name was Honora.
Yeah.
Well done.
Something like that.
Okay.
I was going to say with this episode...
Erica.
And last episode...
Yes, Whistle Speak.
So last episode was great, except that the ending kind of was just sort of like... Burnham zapped into place and told Ovas, like, pretty please, like, let's save him. And Ovas was like, yeah, I kind of want to say, I kind of don't want my child to die anyways. So, man. You know, like, yeah. Like, there was nothing that really, I never felt that there was any, it was a great episode. It's just, I didn't see what pushed them over the edge to make him decide to do what he did. I also.
He promised his dead wife that he would protect.
Yeah, but supposedly they believe in it. But supposedly they believe, like, heavily in this shit. I mean. In any case, and what I also didn't make sense to me was he was saying they addressed the issue, but they didn't resolve the issue of when he was like, we've tried to get rid of this shit before and it causes violence and riots. And then I think it was either Tilly or Burnham was like, well, maybe it won't this time. He's like, you're right. Maybe it won't. And that's kind of how
at least she provided an example with Honora was saying, you know, it's the connections between us that we should honor. But
in this episode, more so, I felt there was a lot of beating around the bush to get to the end of figuring out the space library card because eventually it just ended up with Stamets being like, hey, Book, just try to find it in your brain. And then so he just kind of gave him the answer. There was a journey to that, but it was just kind of like it just ended up, and the connection he made was like, because he did the thing where Book was saying some sentence and he happened to use the word feelings.
Yes,
and then what did you say?
Yeah.
It's like feelings. And he's like, wait a second. Beta Zeds are telepathic. That involves feelings. And so there's probably some kind of connection between the library card and its location. Yeah. And Dr. Derek's, so since they were telepathic, they probably let their thoughts and feelings in there. Yeah. So Book, if you use your telepathic feeling ability, you can find the location and information by thinking out the card real strong.
And like, this is where we're reminded that Star Trek is not hard sci-fi.
Right.
Never has been. And it makes perfect sense because we're like, oh yeah, I buy that because we Beta Zeds and Spock can do mind melds and stuff. It's like, okay, that's just a thing that happens in Star Trek.
And on top of that, I really think they could have done without the whole setup of like, wait, what was that you just said? You know, the thing where the person says a sentence and they pick a random word out of their sentence and say that again. You know,
I wasn't a huge fan.
They could have done that without that. That was so tropey and just like
it was a little tropey. And speaking of that clue, again, it's confusing because when I watched the episode the first time, I'm like, okay, I guess what they're telling us is that the Beta Zed, is it Beta Zed or Beta Zoid? Beta Zed's the planet, Beta Zoid is the person.
Okay. It's a Beta Zed logo.
Yeah.
They imbued the clue, the library card, with an emotion that would give a hint as to where the thing is going to be located. Now, as I mentioned before, I was already confused because this happened 800 years ago and this library is moving around and it's only going to be in this area for a certain period of time. So did they know that it was going to be found? That doesn't make any sense. And then I was like, okay, maybe what they mean is that they've imprinted it with a connection to the library and that connection like updates over time. So what you're really feeling is wherever the library is at, whoever finds the card, if they have an empath vibe off of it, that it's going to be wherever that library is currently. Mm-hmm. I don't know. To me, I didn't like that so much because it was a little confusing. It didn't really make any sense to me. However, at the same time, it was badass to see the Badlands again, made popular in Deep Space Nine and at the beginning of Voyager.
The Badlands.
And because as soon as Book was getting his little visions.
Planets, suns, nebulae.
A dust cloud. A storm. Not a dust storm. Plasma.
I was like, that's the Badlands. Plasma storm? It's like plasma a modern blast. Version Huge of the Badlands. Remote.
Plasma storm, possible explosion. Nebulae. Plasma burst. Discharge.
Eternity. Eternal.
Nebulae.
Those are all the words.
And
he
by
said.
The way, they should have talked to you, the two teams should have talked to each other sooner. Because you're right, Dan. If they had just talked like 5 minutes earlier, they would have solved the. Because you know, remember when Book was all like eternal for some reason? Yeah, I don't know, eternal. Yeah, go talk to your friends.
Yeah,
you know, be team members. I know you divided and conquered.
Stamets's whole role in this episode was getting people to like focus on the clue because like Tilly and Adira were trying to go. Yes. Tilly wanted to go back to her students, Stamets was like, "No, you got to find the clue. You and Adira have to do that." And then Book was like, "Actually, Book at first was like, I'm bored. Give me something to do." Yes.
He was bored last episode too.
And he was like, "And I wish I had that attitude of like, oh man, I got nothing to do. I'm so antsy. I just like to get really comfy." But
I'm gonna go save.
Well,
the
he's like kind of a criminal, so they're trying to like not give him anything to do.
No, yeah. I think that was officially. Just that was just non. And
well, that's like the official thing.
Cool to see Commander Don again, by the way.
But so it started with Book saying, I don't have anything to do. And then Stamets was like, I'll give you something to do. And Book specifically said, if I'm not shooting Breen, I need something to do. And at the second he got a chance to go shoot some Breen, though, Stamets was like, no, you got to keep working on the clue. You got to keep working on the clue. So I don't know. Like, Book was only doing this because he didn't have anything better to do. And then when he found that better thing to do, Stamets was like, no, you got to stay here.
Yeah, but he wasn't going to go shoot at the Breen. He was going to go try to interfere with.
Yeah, I know,
but
it's still the same thing. And why was I don't know why Maul didn't use her cloaking technology earlier. I didn't get. Okay, I'm kind of jumping around a lot here.
This is one of those episodes where you jump around a little bit.
Back to the space library.
Which another great concept.
Yeah,
similar to this. Remember that seed thing? Wasn't that was that Commander Nan's family who like lived on the seed?
It was
station?
It was her people.
Yeah, well that's not. Right, this, it was like distant whatever.
The space library, apparently they knew its location because they were able to plot it somehow with the graphic. And when I looked at that graphic, I didn't see the pattern, but it's a computer is smarter than me, I guess,
again,
so I don't know.
As you mentioned earlier, a lot of this clue stuff doesn't make any sense, and again, here's what they did. The vision said someplace with a bunch of crazy swirly stuff. I saw it and immediately thought the Badlands. And then what they did is they asked Zora to like process of elimination, get rid of whatever. And so they ended up with 15 or whatever different places that would match what Book saw. And then for whatever reason,
they connected the dots.
We connected the dots. Yeah. And I agree with you. It still looked random.
Yeah. Right.
Why couldn't it have gone to any one of those other ones and still been like, because I mean, the whole point of why it wouldn't be hiding if it's going in a straight line. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You don't hide by being like, I'm going to go to a predictable another place.
Maybe there was a lot of gravity things around that it would change its course.
But again, this episode I found very well directed, very very enjoyable.
Except that there's fucking, once again, there's no Saru at all.
There's no Saru, which sucks. They reference him, but we get to see Tarina, and she's badass as usual. And this is the very first episode where I actually bought the relationship between Maul and Locke. There's something about the writing, the acting, the direction, it all came together in a way where I was like, okay, I'm now kind of buying into this love. I'm buying into the relationship, which I did the rest of the season. I wasn't buying it. Now I will tell you, I'm still not buying that Maul can just single-handedly take on all these people, including Commander Nan.
Yeah. I was going to say that she's like a space rat.
Commander.
Or something,
it's a little bit too much suspension of disbelief.
So this is actually what I was about to jump to. And I held myself back, but
like the Discovery jumps. It's got a spore drive.
By the way,
you've got a topical spore drive.
Burnham was saying to Rule, she was like, "Well, we could run away because we have a spore drive." Yeah. So I'm wondering, can't you do the same thing if you had whether you had a spore drive or a warp drive or a pathway drive? Like, I don't understand.
The spore drive is special in that it can literally go anywhere in the universe.
Oh, it can do like Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah,
you can have no idea.
It's
where
ridiculous
they are.
That they would drop research on that. You know.
Yes, exactly. Maybe we'll discuss that at the end of the season. yes.
So
I agree, Dan. She like, had a working prototype.
Yeah.
Yes, it got blown up, but that doesn't mean you just don't. ever go back to it.
She fought Nan, who's a badass, and like the doctor's all like buff and shit. Like, yeah. She totally took him out.
And he has
like,
that
the fuck?
Kick-ass new winter jacket because they put Locke in that... they got that old Dominion War surplus brain cooling chamber.
So
Culber had to wear that badass jacket.
So here's what the whole diversion that Locke did. So Locke is in this chair.
I'm going to OD on some drugs.
Hold on. He was in this chair. He was restrained. I guess he got free movement of his arm, but he was still restrained like his body was. So they put his injector button right within hand's length of it. And not only did they put it in hand's length, now Culber claims he hacked the bio bed. I didn't see any hacking going on. He opened the bio bed and
shit.
He smashed the button. And so they keep tons of the medication. They keep enough medication to kill you right
all
within
all
hand's
reach. All connected up, ready to go.
All connected, ready to go, within hand's reach. And on top of that, I like how also later Nan was like, yeah, he misjudged the dose. It's like, what do you mean he misjudged murdering himself? Like, I think the whole point was and I didn't get what he was. It was trying to be a distraction or something.
Yeah, he wanted to he wanted to cause enough of a reaction the doctor, we're taking advantage of the doctor coming to help save him.
But the thing is the doctor's the only one distracted. He still had Nan and like two or three other guards to deal with.
But Maul has no problem kicking the ass of elite Starfleet security.
So at that point, then why even bother distracting Culber if she can already take out all that Starfleet security? What's one more doctor?
You make an excellent point.
So I don't know what... I mean, I understand that it was meant as a diversion to help her get away, but I didn't see it in action. I didn't see anything about what he did paid off to anything. And she had apparently a cloaking device on her as well. So, like, I don't understand, like, why he did that.
Like a hairstyle from the year 2000.
I know why OP.
What's the term? OP.
Overpowered.
She's very OP.
She is OP. I know what they were trying to get at.
OPP.
I know what they were trying to get at by doing that, but I didn't see it. It didn't work for me at all.
That it continues to not work for me. They haven't earned it. Mm-mm. And I kind of don't like that term, but I can't really think of a better term. Is that these characters? I think they finally earned their relationship. It's unfortunate just the way they've structured the episodes and fed us this information that we're kind of learning a lot of this stuff late in the game. Mm-hmm. But at least I'm buying the relationship now. I'm not buying that both of them together or Maul individually have these skills. Now you could argue, and there's a fair argument to say, well, we know she has these skills because she's demonstrating these skills over and over again. All right. You could say that, but I think there's a lot of examples that are better, more well-earned examples of people having this capacity to kick so much ass that they're constantly escaping or that they're so clever, you know, or they're doing, you know, whatever. But again, that aside, I think that the other parts of the episode work really well.
Back of the thing you were saying, you were buying their relationship. What I wanted to add is that the problem is that by the time I was buying their relationship, they killed Locke off. Now, Locke will probably either A, come back from Progenitor Tech,
precisely.
Or B, like she'll almost bring him back, and then
she'll realize that's wrong or something.
Okay,
or the progenitor people will be like, "You can't do that. It's like genie rules."
Yeah, right.
No falling in love.
No wishing for more wishes.
No wishing for more wishes, and no bringing people back from the dead.
But like by the time we start buying into the relationship, it's at his death scene. That's the time when we start buying.
For that reason,
it diminishes their death scene for me because I haven't become attached to these characters by the time they're dying. I'm becoming attached to them as they're dying, but that's not enough to make me feel upset that he died. You know?
But you're right. Absolutely. 100%. But at the same time, it's still good. I was emotionally touched by, especially the death scene. We'll see how it evolves in the next three episodes. But what I was going to say earlier is that part of what makes this episode work is that they bring in this whole Breen political aspect. And while, yes, there's a certain amount of exposition, it's that classic, you know, sci-fi, Game of Thrones, whatever, where it doesn't matter. You don't need to know the details. It's sufficient to understand, okay, there's a power struggle
here.
It was
an interesting game of chess, like mental chess. Precisely. They were playing with that.
The motivate, as seemingly intricate as both the Breen political situation and Tarina's sort of response and the options available to the Federation. Yes, it's intricate, but it's very easy to understand. It's very, very accessible.
It seems preferable to claims of a triple infestation.
The motivations are not weird motivations, right? Just they're totally understandable motivations. Oh. And to me, that made me much more engaged and invested in the storyline. Excellent point. You know what? I make that sound when I have a few too many Seven of Limes.
Oh, you.
There was some talk on the internet about that. They were all like, but Jet Reno comes from the 23rd century. Yeah. How would she know about Seven of Nine? It's like, but maybe she learned about it later, or maybe it's just a fun meta joke.
I like this Red, the reference to Reds. I guess that's Ferengi
bar.
So she was also
a
VIP shuttle pilot, a deep mercury welder, and a bartender at a cozy little dive on Ashlan 4. And she wasn't actually a used bookstore. She didn't work in a used bookstore, but she did smuggle used books.
Yeah.
But I thought it was funny that they bring up that she was in a used bookstore. Like all her jobs sort of fit together as like a person. It's like, except for the deep mercury welder, I guess that's kind of different.
They won't do this, sadly, but they could have a TV series or a web series or whatever you want to call it. It could just be a show where Jet Reno is just sitting around fixing something and people come by and ask her a question and just have a conversation with her and she gives them some advice.
This targeting matrix is screwy.
Just while she's tinkering away. I would watch that. Yeah. I would watch that. I'm looking forward to, you know, Section 31 and we're looking forward to Starfleet Academy.
Do you think so?
But I would watch Jet Reno just talking to people while she's fixing things.
I would too. I think I brought this up before, but Starfleet Academy, like it seems like they meant to start that sooner because they pretty much pulled Tilly out of the character lineup. Like,
well, we don't
last,
know the
last
details.
Well, last season.
Certainly they were setting it up
as far back as last season. And I didn't hear any indication that she left on her own. Like
I don't know, but we've discussed, we don't know the particulars when it comes to like budget and schedule and stuff. Because you know.
But speaking of budget, no Saru. But, yeah.
And not only no Saru, no President Rilik. Mm-hmm. Right? Which was a
That's
very... Because Tarina, it was a very expositional way of Tarina saying like, we don't want to pay to have her back just yet. Saru's pretty expensive too, so we'll bring them in the last couple episodes. She's delegated me to negotiate.
He was like working on a different movie or something.
Yeah, yeah, he was. He was doing a movie.
Reno,
Doug Jones.
So I have a question about this part.
Truth is, I used to move hard to find folios for a shady antiquarian archivist.
Yes.
And then she goes,
try saying that one five times fast.
Do you think she meant to say this five times fast?
Hard to find folios, hard to find folios, hard to find folios, hard to find folios, hard to find folios.
Or did she mean to say this?
Antiquarian archivist, antiquarian archivist, antiquarian archivist, antiquarian archivist, antiquarian archivist.
There better be one more or, which is the correct answer.
Hard to find folios for a shady antiquarian archivist.
Is that one you think?
I think it's the whole thing.
Yeah, this
the
one.
Antiquarian.
Hard to find folios for a shady antiquarian archivist.
But I don't think it's this one because listen to the difference between that one and this one.
Truth is, I used to move hard to find folios for a shady antiquarian archivist.
She said, truth is.
Hard to find folios for a truth shady is, antiquarian hard to archivist. Find folios for a shady antiquarian archivist.
Truth is,
keep pointing
truth
at
is,
me.
I used to move keep hard to find folios.
Okay, truth
for
is,
a shady
I used to move.
Antiquarian
okay,
archivist.
So it didn't have the part where it's truth is, I used to move. That part wasn't part of the five times fast.
Yeah, I agree.
It was that hard to find folios and the rest.
Yeah,
okay, we agree.
All right, we're agreeing.
She never has to say anything fast.
Yeah. Oh wait, I got a fast burn a moment. It'll just take a second here.
Did they really do it just to fulfill an Erica? So we jump away with Maul and Locke, and then what? You just deny the Federation has them?
I didn't fully understand it, but then I did a little digging and learned.
Commander Asha, there's going to be some turbulence. I hope you like a challenge.
Those are the fast burn a moment.
Ever since you started pointing that out, I'm loving it.
I know,
like, this
it's
is
really
great.
Good. Yeah.
This is fantastic.
But then
right.
I did a little digging and learned.
Any other final concluding bits? I know we had to rush through this one a little bit, but as you noted, Dan, it's a pretty straightforward episode. I did find Erica very interesting. It was an entertaining way to get us to the next episode, which I'm looking forward to because I don't know what the episode is going to be about, but the implication is, and I think this is very charming, that they have to find a library And they got their library card.
They got their library card.
That's a very cool Star Trek adventure.
They said library
and so I'm
card.
Really looking forward to the next episode.
I did kind of take issue with the fact that... Okay, I guess you could take two schools of thought on this. I had a problem with the fact that we just missed the whole capture of Locke and Maul. Yeah. Now, you could look at, like, I don't mean like in the movie The Hangover. Part of the fun of The Hangover, the main, like, gimmick fun of The Hangover is the fact that you're learning what happened the night before.
So you wanted Polaroids at the end of this episode?
What?
Remember the end of Hangover? They have a bunch of Polaroids that show what happens?
Okay, see, let me finish. Yeah, what I'm saying is, with The Hangover, it worked in The Hangover because we're learning about what happened the night before with the characters from their perspective, and that's what works. This, like, they already know what happened. I just feel like we missed a portion of the story, their whole capturing.
Or it was just unexciting.
I mean,
it sounds like they just found them and just beamed them off of the escape pod.
I mean, I think it was a missed opportunity to have like a cool, like, because you got to have a capture scene. No. I was so confused at the beginning when Maul was saying that thing at the beginning.
Yeah, recording that she had broadcast out.
Special offer, courier services.
Special office offer.
Limited time only.
Courier services.
And so, and then I was like, what's going on? And then they had him in there. I was like, I guess they captured him. I don't know. I guess maybe a lot of people don't have an issue with that. I would have liked to have seen that whole... I know it happened on another ship that was far away, but I think
gave me a good idea, which is they should have done exactly what they did in The Hangover, which is at the end of the story, you should have seen a bunch of Polaroids with the wacky adventures of the, what was it, the Locker? Dealing with Maul and Locke, running around the ship.
Ferocious, relentless.
Doing all sorts of schemes and comical schemes, and there's a tiger and Mike Tyson shows up at some point for some reason.
Fierce is a satay crew.
A yakety sax. Yeah.
Do you know what satay crew is?
Fierce is a satay crew.
A sautéed crew?
Satay crew.
Satay
crew.
Fierce
is a satay crew.
That's what Nan said.
It's
some kind of cat animal. Some fierce cat animal.
I like fierce cat
animals.
It
was mentioned that there was a ship called the Mitchell.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like Gary Mitchell.
Like Gary Mitchell.
Gary Mitchell.
Not jokingly.
Or any other...
I'm not jokingly.
number of Mitchells out there. Last few things. Zip them out. Squirt them out, Dan.
There's some things called awkworms.
Yes.
The director descendant of the Emperor is the scion of the Breen Imperium. Yeah. Okay.
Scion just means child.
Two things I want clarified. One All is right. What does the scion? What is the role of the scion? The scion is supposed to help. Is the part of the royal blood that helps like the Primarch succeed into like
usually the
kingdom?
The implication is that the uncle wants to control him because he's he would be the emperor through Locke. Because
so
Locke is like the prince.
Okay, Locke would still be number one, but the impression I got is that you kind of control this blood person, this royalty blood. Yeah. It's like if you control them, then you get to lead the country.
He would be like a regent.
Yeah, so, he would be the regent, but effectively have power.
It made it seem like he would be the number one in control.
I think if anyone has...
Because like, Locke was going against his will. What would they have done? Put him in a cage so he couldn't escape?
I believe the way to consider it is using a semi-historical example. If you've watched the recent show Shogun, which is excellent.
Excellent.
If you've read the book or if you are familiar with the history that it is based on, you had a nominal hereditary leader, who was a child, but who was effectively under the control of, as Jesse mentioned, a regent, so that the regent was not emperor in name, but was, for all practical purposes, had, for a variety of reasons, control. So
it seems like some kind of technicality, some kind of loophole that you can control the country, but still need to have this one person, like you have to own this one person in order to get
that
power.
Nothing, it's an exceedingly common thing throughout history and still exists today, in which you can, through threats or bribery or psychological control, have effective control over somebody and manipulate them, particularly if they're...
Yeah, I'm saying that's weird. I'm saying that's fucking weird.
Like
I'm saying it's not weird because
minor,
it happens all the time.
No, I'm saying...
A minor inherits the throne and like you have to have an adult.
Very common.
I'm saying regardless of how common it is, I think that's weird. The idea of that is weird what I'm saying.
Weird as in like the world is a weird fucking shitty place.
Right. Yeah, other question real quick. I have to know... So at first, at first they were like, we're not going
to
give
Locke and Maul to the Breen. Like, yeah. Trina was in agreement. Burnham was in agreement.
They didn't want Locke and Maul to magically give them the answers to the clues that they don't actually have. Because that's another critique I have. Maul should not be a threat with regard to the clues. Yeah. She has no access to the rest of the clues. Okay, she doesn't have the key.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, but at the end, suddenly Trina changed her mind. And, like, I'm not sure why they changed their mind.
Because there was a big giant ship outside that was going to destroy them.
Yeah.
But they knew that was going to happen.
No. They were trying to have that not happen at the
beginning. Vance was like, "Okay, let's go on the run for a while."
Yeah,
Burnham was wait. Let me finish my fucking sentence. Hold on, let me finish my sentence, please.
Okay, and then we got to finish this podcast.
Okay, Vance was saying to her. Now you made me lose my train of thought. Vance was saying to Burnham, he goes, "Let's go on the run for a while." Mm. And Burnham says, "Like, no, let's face him right now." Well, I didn't see any problem with them going on the run for a while. They could have bought him some time. In any case, they decided to wait for whatever reason, deal with him right away. And so they deal with him. And you're saying just because the ship showed up, they decided to give up. The impression I got is they were trying to tell us that Maul had some kind of secret, and the fact that she went over to them means like, oh well, they already know the secret now of the progenitor.
Yeah, that's
tech.
What they implied. Because I just don't buy it because it doesn't make any sense. But Maul doesn't have the actual stuff.
But Maul was saying that she does have the stuff.
I know. That's the problem I have with this whole season is people keep saying things that don't make sense with the evidence that's on screen. Like, they've got all these clues and keys put together and all that. They're making a little machine that presumably is going to do something at the end. And Maul doesn't have any of that. I'm not, like, the clue thing with the Maul stuff doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. I guess the idea is at first they were trying to protect the tech, and at the end, like, when Maul gave up the tech, even though we don't know, she doesn't make sense that she has it. Anyway, then we have to play a quick game of duty or no duty.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
Duty or no duty?
Yes.
It is my sworn duty.
Okay. I don't know. I have no idea.
Jesse.
No duty.
It is my sworn duty.
This is a doot.
No duty.
You no duty? What do you say, Patrick?
No duty.
It is my sworn duty.
I say duty.
Okay. All right. Great.
Duty.
That has been the It's Got Star Trek podcast for this week. We hope you
all hands prepare for the imminent arrival of the Breen.
We squeezed
Breen in the same.
Squeezed in a lot.
Locke is in bad shape. Locke is fading.
Locke
is dead.
Next week, the episode is called Labyrinths. That's what we will be discussing next week. And
maybe we won't.
In the meantime, social media, It's Got Star Trek, website, itsgotstartrek.com, YouTube. Check out the video of Dan making and eating.
An Erga is a blood bounty.
A gross sandwich.
It was delicious.
And so that'll be it for us this week.
The Labyrinths of the Mind.
We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Dismissed.
I may have padded my resume with that one. Truth is, I used to move hard-to-find folios for a shady antiquarian archivist. Try saying that one 5 times fast.
Sorry, you were a smuggler?
I smuggled. I had a lot of odd jobs before I committed to Starfleet. VIP shuttle pilot, deep mercury welder, bartender at a cozy little dive on Ashlon 4. I'm actually supposed to pick up a guest shift tonight at Red's Lounge. You haven't lived until you've tried my 7 of Limes.
Wow, you really got around. I'm sorry, not like that.
Oh yeah, like that.
All right, well.